Since there was no sense trying to walk after a plane, the companions decided to try to get a few of the wags in the garage working. As expected, the civilian vehicles were all dead, but most of the military wags were in usable shape. Starting with a Hummer, Ryan repaired the tubeless tires, while Jack installed a spare nuke battery from storage, and Doc filled the fuel tank, along with a couple of extra cans. The fuel pumps had been dry, but there were several cans of condensed fuel in the locked supply closet. The companions had no idea what the stuff was, not even Mildred. It burned like gasoline, but didn't evaporate when poured into a puddle on the floor. It would, however, power a gasoline or diesel engine and seemed to last forever. Cold hearts killed for even a small can of the stuff, and barons would pay any price imaginable to obtain it for their war wags. More than once, the companions had bought the freedom of a friend in chains with the juice, and once used it to firebomb an entire vill to put an end to a hated enemy. Meanwhile, Mildred and Christy raided the redoubt for whatever trade goods could be found. Pocket knives, rolls of toilet paper, some spare tools, pencils, boots, empty brass for reloading, and several of the M16 assault rifles. Filling a couple of footlockers with the items, the women each thought they saw something moving in the shadows, but every time they went to investigate, there was nothing there. Christy unholstered her revolver and kept it in her hand from that point onward. Off by himself, JB was draining brake fluid from the civilian wags and mixing it with some chems from the janitor's closet to make smoke bombs. He had done this before, and the charges worked great. But this time, he just wasn't sure how effective the smoke would be against somebody looking down from above. But, lacking air-to-ground missiles, it was still their best defense.
Got it!
A second Hummer was brought back to life, and then Ryan tried to get one of the motorcycles parked along the wall to turn over. Of the dozen bikes in the garage, only five hadn't seized up solid over the decades, and he could only get two of them to run without constant tinkering.
Good enough.
Ryan fine-tuned the carburetor on a big silver Harley Davidson. When satisfied, Ryan started doing the same thing to a BMW motorcycle. It was a good bike for combat. Instead of a drivechain like the Harley, the Beamer used a transmission like a wag, so it was incredibly silent. However, its gas mileage wasn't very good, and this particular bike was covered with fancy electronic equipment, none of which worked. So he ripped it all off, knowing that every ounce removed meant fuel saved.
Here, found this.
Jack passed over a spray can. Another was sticking out of the pocket of his leather jacket. Snapping off the plastic top, Ryan gave a nod in thanks and started painting over the shiny chrome trim of the bikes. Stealth was important in tracking, as well as speed. Two Hummers and two bikes would be more than enough for this wreck, and a hell of a lot more than they usually had. 9 times out of 10, walking was the way of the day. But this redoubt was well stocked with wags, and they would happily make use of transport that came their way. Wisely, Ryan had passed on the APC, as the engine of the armored personnel carrier would have required days of work. And while the half-track was in fine shape and could go practically anywhere, it was slow and heavy. Armor was good for a vill wall, but over the years the companions had found that maneuverability and speed served them better. In short order, the companions were ready, and the Hummers piled with supplies and trade goods. As JB made some final checks on the wags, Ryan and Christy went to the blast door. Ryan stepped outside while Christy closed the portal, and he reopened it with the external keypad.
Okay, the external keypad works. Just had to make sure we weren't locking ourselves outside permanently.
Better safe than sorry, lover.
They walked back along the tunnel.
Carve that on my tombstone, lover.
In the garage, the two found the rest of the companions ready to go. JB was behind the wheel of the black Hummer, with Doc riding shotgun, and Mildred in the camo-colored Hummer, with Jack in the passenger seat.
Keypad work?
No prob, JB.
Ryan climbed on the Harley and kicked the machine alive.
So let's roll.
Christy twisted the ignition of the BMW. Only the wisps of exhaust from the tailpipes and the flickering gauges on the curved dashboard showed the luxury motorcycle was in operation. Inside the black Hummer, Doc worked the bolt on the M16 assault rifle cradled in his arms. As a defensive weapon, it was ideal, The rapid fire made less noise than his Lama, fired faster, and considerably farther. But more importantly, many people would back off from others armed with rapid fires, when they might try to jack folks merely armed with wheel guns. Doc and Jack had split the few rounds of ammo, so each had 15 rounds in their clips. After that, it was handguns and grins.
Move them out!
JB moved his Hummer forward in the point position. Staying close behind the black Hummer, Ryan and Christy took the rocking chair, and Mildred covered the rear. As the convoy disappeared around the first corner of the anti-rad tunnel, something moved in the shadows of the grease pit and slowly started moving after them. Impatiently, the convoy waited for the door to close. Then they proceeded over the mounds of smashed masonry to finally reach the grassy side of the hillock. Lightning flashed on the horizon. Glancing at the turbulent sky, JB saw a break in the clouds and slammed on the brakes. Quickly, he pulled out the mini-sextant and focused it on the sun. JB barely got the sextant aligned when the clouds rolled in to fill the brief opening, and the land was cast into orange light once more.
You called it, Millie. This is southern Indiana. That's the Ohio River.
Any air bases nearby?
Nothing on the map, but then this is merely a travel guide for tourists.
Smoke! 2 o'clock!
Ryan snapped his head in that direction and saw the white plume rising from behind a sand dune on the distant horizon. The smoke was still rising, so it had to be from a new fire.
You think it's our pilot cooking dinner?
Or being cooked as dinner.
The companions waited expectantly, but there was no accompanying sound.
Too far away! 4, maybe 5 miles!
Our mysterious plane may be no more. Should we continue?
Hell yeah, Doc. Until we see the wreckage, I'm going to assume it's still around. That blast could have simply been the plane bombing something.
By plane. Yeah, makes sense. Either way, we need to know.
It is better to learn for certain that something believed to be disproved is wrong than to believe in the lie of an incorrect fact.
As soon as I figure out what the hell that means, I'll have a snappy comeback.
Indeed, madam. And so shall I.
Following the river, the companions drove the vehicles over the rough ground, trying to keep on a northern route in the general direction of the fire. Skirting dangerously near the edge of the riverbank, Ryan scowled at the rushing water below. It was deep and fast, not an easy thing to cross. Unless they found a way, this was going to be a wasted trip. After about a mile, Ryan and Christy took point. The nimble motorcycles able to traverse the irregular terrain easier than the lumbering Hummers. Soon they were driving through a field of weeds, the ground littered with the remnants of a pre-dark city. A smashed stone gargoyle peered out from a bush, the top of a telephone pole jutted from a mound of bricks and decay, and a rusted mailbox lay embedded in the hard-packed dirt. Finding himself trapped in an arch of rusted metal debris, Ryan stopped his bike to walk it back out. Breaking to a halt on the crest of a windswept mound, Christy waited for him to rejoin her before continuing. As the Hummers rolled into view again, Christy noticed that there seemed to be some sort of a brick road under the weed she was parked in, patches of the broken street still visible here and there among the waving plants. Hoping the road might lead to a bridge, she tried following its course with her eyes, but it seemed to sweep inland to the east. Useless. Then the brick road ended at a large, shiny patch of what looked like ice. But she knew better, and her heart started pounding hard. It was a lake of glass. The telltale mark of where a small nuke had gone off. The big ones left deserts that stretched for hundreds of miles. The really big ones leveled mountains.
Ryan, check your rad counter!
Already did.
The pre-dark device on Ryan's denim shirt showed that they were nowhere near the danger zone yet.
We're safe enough here, but it wouldn't go any closer.
Starting forward once more, the two rolled through the field of weeds, the nameless city only a cracked suggestion under the layers of windblown sand and stubby cactus. Here and there, small pieces of pre-dark buildings jutted out, and at one point, the corner of a building stood several feet high. The jagged, cinder-block wall formed a natural windbreak, and there was a burn spot on the ground to show where the ruins had recently been used as a campsite by somebody.
Looks like the place burned down rather than got nuked. probably from the heat flash of the nuke that made the glass lake.
Motion behind the busted wall caught Ryan's attention.
Ambush!
Pulled his 6-hour, throwing the Harley into motion. As the bikes lurched away, two stickies darted out of hiding. As the shambling creatures started forward, Ryan and Christy simply kept going, and soon left the muties far behind. Coming into view through the tall weeds, JB saw the stickies. He savagely twisted the steering wheel. The Hummer swerved hard, and just missed colliding with the stickies as they rushed. The camo-colored Hummer tried to arc around the two muties, but another stood from a depression in the ground and spread its arms wide as it tried to embrace the wag. The working suckers lining its flesh gripped a thick, gelatinous ooze. If the mutie touched the Hummer, the only way to get it off would be with fire. Inside the Hummer, Jack leveled the M16. Mildred hit the gas. The round hit the sticky just under the left eye, making a neat round hole. As the creature fell to the ground, the Hummer rolled over the mutie and was in the clear. In the rearview mirror, Mildred saw more stickies rise from hidden positions among the ruins and realized the place was infested. This was no trap for careless outlanders, but their home, a nest of stickies. Leaving the creatures behind, Mildred and Jack soon joined the others on top of a small hill overlooking the river. More smashed buildings stood there, but more importantly, a sagging railroad trestle crossed the rushing water.
No way we're getting across that. Maybe the bikes could, but not these Hummers.
Well, there's nothing else in sight. Maybe if we went one at a time?
No way. Can't be done. All that's holding the bridge together is rust and bird shit.
Our moist friends are disappointed over our not staying for dinner. 'Tis time for a decision, my friends.
Kicking down the stand, Ryan parked his bike and walked to the edge of the trestle. Carefully, he studied the water below, then tossed in a stone to check for depth. It might just work.
Whatever you're doing, hurry it up, lover.
Christy pulled her S&W wheel gun. Just then, a sticky rose into view and began to run their way. Closing an eye, the redhead aimed and waited for the mutie to come within range.
Okay, get ready.
Ryan reached into a pocket. Pulling out a grin, he yanked the pin free, dropped the handle, and tossed the bomb onto the weakened trestle.
Down!
The grin detonated, and the entire middle span of the bridge was violently blown apart, the fireball almost spanning the river. Shrapnel flew everywhere. The whole structure came loose from its moorings and tumbled into the river.
Get moving!
Ryan scrambled back onto the Harley. Taking the lead, the Deathlands warrior rolled to the edge of the riverbank, then spread his legs to help support the two-wheeler as he eased it over the side and down into the water. The wreckage from the destroyed trestle was still moving as it settled into the mud, and he nosed the Harley onto some wooden railroad ties to start working his way to the other side along the loose piles of bricks and steel girders. A few seconds later, Christy and the Hummers were in the shallows and following his example. The BMW bike rolled along the shifting materials with ease, Christy darting expertly from pile to pile until she reached dry ground. The Hummers didn't fare as well, the ancient timbers breaking under the weight. Both military wags dropped into the river, the churning water almost reaching the windows. But the machines were designed for this, and the exhaust stacks on their hood stayed well clear of the cold Ojai. Switching to four-wheel drive, JB fought his wag up a slope of settling bricks and went sailing over the top to land in the shallows with a tremendous splash.
Come on, you son of a bitch!
The tough Hummer dug its wide tires into the black mud and battled onto the shore to join Ryan and Christy waiting for them.
Hey, great plan, Ryan. I never would have considered blowing up the bridge.
Never thought it was smart, only that it would work.
Not yet it hasn't. Millie and Jack are stuck.
The brown and green patterned Hummer was in the middle of the destroyed trestle. Mildred tried to rock the vehicle back and forth. The undercarriage was obviously caught on something. Tumbling over the embankment like blood-crazed lemmings, the stickies fell into the rushing water. They clambered madly over the moving rubble. One of them jumped onto a timber, only to have the wooden beam flip over and smash it underwater. A red stain began to spread downriver from that point, but the other muties ignored their fallen brother to continue pursuit of the tasty two legs.
Fire blast!
Ryan started to pull his blaster, then holstered it again. There were too many stickies. He had a better idea. Climbing off the Harley, he went to the front of the black Hummer and disengaged the tow line.
Cover me!
He hopped off the bank. He sank to his ankles in the soft black silt in the bottom of the shallows. He struggled to pull his combat boots free.
Oh, shit!
The braided steel tow line trailed loosely behind him, Christy feeding the long with her bare hands as Doc started firing the M16 at the stickies, placing his shots with extreme care to try not to hit the other Hummer. Crawling onto a rock, Ryan jumped to a steel girder and started sliding closer to the trapped wag. When the beam began to move from his weight, Ryan grabbed onto a stanchion and took the ride until the girder started to dip into the water. Leaping forward with all of his strength, Ryan landed sprawling on the sinking pile of bricks under the trapped Hummer. He could see the cluster of twisted iron rod from inside the support columns of the bridge holding the wag prisoner. If the Hummer had been a civilian wag, it would have been pierced in a dozen spots, but the armored belly of the military wag was undamaged. Just trapped like an impaled rat on a roasting stick. Ryan struggled to his feet and attached the tow line to the steel ring on the front of the Hummer, just below its winch. He tugged on the braided steel to make sure it was firmly secured. A sticky appeared on the roof of the wag, waving its arms.
Fuck you!
Jack threw open the side door.
Get in!
Moving fast, Ryan dove inside, just as the tow line began to straighten across the watery destruction.
Hold on!
The Hummer jerked forward. The wag only moved a few feet before stopping again.
Shit!
A sticky appeared at the window, and Jack blew its face off with his Colt Magnum. Squeezing into the rear compartment, Ryan threw open the back window and started blowing hot lead into the inhuman horde waiting for the rubble. Then he missed a mutie as the Hummer jounced forward once more, only to slide back a few feet to its original position.
Time to leave! Shit!
The opposite shore was only 20 feet away and looked as distant as the moon. A sticky rose from the water alongside Milford.
Oh, no you don't! All right, Hummer. One more fucking time!
Throwing the Hummer into reverse, Milford slammed into a sticky, the body plastering along the chassis of the wag. When she could go no farther, Milford waved at JB on the shore and threw the transmission into forward. Something bent under the Hummer as it slammed forward, only to jerk to a halt and start to tilt sideways, heading for the river. Holding on for dear life, Ryan and Jack are steadily out the windows now.
Come on!
Slamming into reverse once more, Milford heard a very unsettling sound from the tow line.
No!
The Hummer suddenly dropped a foot. All four tires dug into the loose bricks, sending them spraying out backward like a shotgun blast, and the war wag surged forward.
Ha! We did it! We're free!
Phew! At last!
Covered with dead muties, the camo-colored Hummer jounced and bucked through the submerged debris and barely managed to lurch onto the shoreline. As Mildred braked the machine to a frantic halt on solid ground, Christy dashed to disengage the hook, and then JB hit the winch controls, reeling back the steel cable. More stickies were shambling from the river now, as Christy ran back to the BMW and hopped onto the bike. She took the lead as the Hummer drove away from the river. In the back of the wag, Ryan scowled as his Harley was surrounded by stickies. Then the Hummer went around a sandy hillock, and the bike was gone from sight.
No going back now, I suppose.
Not that way, anyhow.
Ryan leaned back in his seat, carefully reloading.
Maybe we all fly home, huh?
Stopping a good distance from the river, the companions got out and used a few of the trading knives to hack the dead stickies off the chassis of the black Hummer. When they were down to just fingers and toes, JB poured a little condensed fuel on the oozing gobbets and burned them off. The smell was horrendous. Finished with their grisly task, the companions climbed back into their vehicles and drove off. Each of them trying not to think about what a sticky's deadly hands could do to human flesh if they got a good hold. At first, the driving through the grasslands was easy, and the three vehicles made good speed. But after about an hour, the companions were forced to slow down as loose sand began covering the ground in larger and larger patches. Soon the grass and weeds were gone, and they found themselves rolling through a proper desert, Rising over the horizon came a mesa, the steep column of gray stone giving the barren vista an alien feel.
Are you sure we're going in the correct direction?
Blinking the sweat from his eyes, JB glanced at the open compass on the seat between them.
10 degrees off true north. That was the mark for the explosion.
Then lay on, Macduff.
Is that another poem, Doc?
No, indeed. It was from a Scottish tale of murder and sex, madness and revenge.
Sounds good. Tell me some.
With pleasure, John Barrymore. In fact, your own name has a theatrical connection to the story that I shall elucidate shortly. It all begins on a dark and stormy night.
In the Black Hummer, Mildred was beside herself.
Poor John. I can see Doc waving his arms about him, so he must be reciting something. Probably the entire damn Iliad.
Iliad? That any good?
Well, it is a classic. Wait, what am I saying? It's boring as hell.
As the cool air from the river was left behind, the heat of the sun started slowly building in spite of the heavy cloud cover. A storm was brewing. The wind increased and the loose sand formed little dust eddies. Wiping their stinging eyes, JB and Mildred tried closing the windows and switching on the air conditioners. However, the old units only delivered warm air. With no choice, JB and Mildred cracked the windows again, and everybody tied handkerchiefs around their mouths and noses to keep out the swirling dust particles. Shrugging out of her bearskin coat, Christy did the same, then also loosened her shirt and rolled up her sleeves to try to keep cool. The BMW's engine had been running slightly warm since the redoubt, and the slower she went, the more the motorcycle struggled to maintain speed and keep up with the Hummers. The fuel was dropping at a noticeable rate, and the engine temperature climbed dangerously high every time she paused to rest her arm or wipe the sweat from her forehead. All around the three vehicles, the whispering dunes rose and fell like waves at sea, the rare cluster of cactus or large rock only serving to heighten the feeling of emptiness. Breaking to a stop, Christy raised a closed fist. Turning her head, she sniffed and caught it again. Wood smoke and something else. She sent the Beamer rolling forward. Going around a particularly tall sand dune, Christy slowed as she weaved through smaller dunes. She halted and waited until the two Hummers arrived and parked slightly apart from each other. For a few minutes, the companions stayed with their vehicles and studied the area. There had obviously been some sort of a battle here, but it was impossible to tell what had happened.
Ain't this the damnedest thing?
Slowly climbing out of the camo-colored Hummer, Ryan had to agree with his friend. The sand was churned with dozens of overlapping footprints and a few large brown stains that could only have been spilled blood. But there were no bodies in sight, aside from 4 chestnut stallions. The horses were lying motionless on the ground, with feathered arrows deep in their throats. Flies buzzed around the wounds and crawled thickly over their matted hides. The 4 animals were wearing saddles, the saddlebags still firmly lashed closed. Yet in spite of that, the sand was dotted with clothing and personal items. A couple of canteens, a leather pouch, a shoe, and a gun. A small campfire was glowing a few yards away from the burning plain, the dying embers still red hot. Retrieving the weapon, Ryan dusted it off and checked the cylinder. The revolver was still loaded.
Shitfire. Whatever happened here had to have been so fast that the horse riders never even got off a shot. Only, who would leave a working blaster behind?
While JB started going through the saddlebags, Mildred went to the smoldering remains of the biplane. Using a tire iron from the Hummer, she prodded the ashes and turned over a few pieces of the fuselage, inspecting the wreckage carefully.
Bad news, I'm afraid. This biplane isn't pre-dark. It was made by hand.
Is that possible?
Sure, Ryan. The Wright brothers did a lot more with a lot less than is available these days. And some of these instruments even have car manufacturer logos on them. Nobody from before the nuke war would have done that.
Damn.
There's more. This plane was firebombed after it crashed.
After? Maybe the fuel tank just blew when it hit.
Christy's hair was moving against the dry breeze. She was starting to get a bad feeling about this place. Using the tire iron, Mildred tapped the dented aluminum canister lying amid the blackened wood-frame skeleton.
The fuel tank's still intact. This probably crashed when it ran out of gas.
Something else started the fire.
Going to the front of the wreck, Mildred tapped the engine block.
See those pieces of scattered glass? My guess is this was hit with a Molotov.
Nonsense. That does not make any sense, Madam Doctor. Why would somebody standing on the ground next to a blazing fire throw a Molotov when they could have simply set the plane ablaze with a burning stick? Oh, yes, I see. They would not have. Thus, this was attacked by somebody not on the ground. A second plane.
Exactly. It must have been that manned plane we saw earlier. This was a drone, see? The controls were lashed into place. Some of the rawhide straps are in place.
No pilot?
Jack was leaning against the hood of the black Hummer, his face set in a scowl. There wasn't a single thing about this that he liked. The tracks on the ground were all wrong, and those arrows...
There was no pilot when it took off, yes. If the wind is right, there's no problem with that.
Licking a finger, Mildred tested the direction of the desert breeze and walked past the dead horses to look across the sandy landscape. But she saw nothing along the flight path of the biplane except empty desert. How far had this thing gone by itself? Crouching near the campfire, Christy lifted a green stick from the ashes.
Then explain this. Somebody built a big fire, then tossed in green wood.
That made a good smoke signal. So they must have wanted to be located.
To let their Baron know they found the plane?
Christy frowned deeply.
Only the Baron returns to blow them all to hell.
Perhaps these men came to steal the plane. No, if that were true, they would not have lit a signal fire.
Which means the Baron betrayed them.
Or that it was too dangerous to land. And so the Baron destroyed the crashed plane in the only way possible.
Going to one of the dead horses, Ryan pulled an arrow out of its neck. The workmanship was excellent. And while the shaft was wood, the tip was carved bone.
Sounds like your typical Baron, all right. He burned the plane to keep it out of the hands of another Baron and left his people behind to die.
Which means the Sekhmen couldn't tell anything under torture, or else he would have firebombed them too.
Ryan gave a slow nod, which meant that if they killed this Sky Baron, that would be the end of flying machines and sky bombs. Or were they reading all of this wrong, and something else entirely had happened here?
Well, there's only food and water in the saddlebags, none of it eaten, so the riders couldn't have come from very far away, less than a day's ride distance at the very most.
That would be only a few hours in the Hummers.
If that.
Carefully going to a clean area, Ryan hunched low and scanned the ground. The jumble of footprints was already starting to fill in from the windblown dust and sand. Kneeling alongside Ryan, Jack ran his fingertips across the muddled prints, his ruby-red eyes narrowed in concentration. Saying nothing to disturb the teen, Ryan watched him carefully. Although Ryan had been hunting all of his life, to him the marks were an indecipherable mess. Jack lifted his head.
Four sets of boot prints. Look like four Sekhmen. One of them a big man with good boots. Jumped by nine other men. All of them gnomes. They barefoot.
Barefoot? Savages.
Oh, Weiss.
It looks like that smoke signal attracted more than just the Sky Baron.
What did they do with the bodies?
Not dead. Took them alive.
All of them, Jack?
Yep.
If it was torture, then only one or two of the Sekhmen would have been needed. No need to haul all of them alive to the dungeon of some vill. And it couldn't have been slavers, because they would have taken the dropped gun. That alone was worth more than the four men, their gear and horses, combined. The Sekhmen had been jacked by barefoot savages who had captured them alive, left behind a year's supply of horse meat, and didn't want the guns.
Nuking hell. Gotta be cannies.
That was when the top of a sand dune sifted apart to reveal several half-naked men armed with bows, and arrows suddenly rained down upon the companions from every direction.
Fire blast!
Get along, Moses!
The old man leaned forward in the wag to shake the reins.
Come on now, boy! You can do it!
Obediently, the lead mule threw itself forward against the harness, and the others followed suit. The rear tire was triumphantly pulled out of the rut it had been trapped in, And once more, the rickety cart started rolling along the dried riverbed.
There you go, boy!
Setting his battered hat to a better angle against the sun, the ancient driver settled onto the splintery plank that served as a seat and tried to get comfortable. Forming a ragged line, there were four other carts similar to the old man's. Loose sheets of canvas were draped over the cargo in the back of each of the flatbeds, the contents shifting at every pothole and gully. Turning was a difficult job, but the driver really didn't care. This was a one-way trip. Once they reached Indiraville, their troubles would be over.
Eric Jeffers is a good man and never goes back on his word. Unlike so many other barons. Steady there, Moses. Good boy. That's it.
The mule twitched a shoulder to dislodge a buzzing fly and kept going. The five other beasts dumbly followed his lead. In the second cart, a young man controlled the reins, and a middle-aged woman sat alongside with a loaded crossbow in her lap. In the third, that mix was reversed, and in the last cart, two burly women sat side by side. Their faces were grim and hard, their expressions only softening when they glanced at each other. The riverbed was relatively flat, with studded gullies from the hard summer rains. Bare, rocky hills rose sharply on either side of the passage, casting whole sections of the riverbed into shadow. But the old caravan leader had been ready for that. Each wagon in the caravan had a pair of torches set alongside the driver, the wads of cloth and rope soaked in sticky tar that had been cooked out of chunks of pre-dark asphalt. The torches would reek like a burning outhouse, but the flames would be as bright as a lantern, and no amount of rain or wind could put them out. Dogs raced freely on the riverbed, darting under the carts and dodging the slowly rolling tires. The fur of the muscular animals was patchy with scars, their ears chewed and tails broken. Each had been given a name, but they all responded to the universal call, dog. Playfully nipping and chasing each other as they escorted the lumbering caravan, the dogs stayed well clear of the harnessed mules. When first introduced back at the old bill, the leader of the pack had bitten the hind leg of a complacent old mule to establish authority. The ancient pack animal didn't change its dull expression as it violently kicked backward and drove a sharp hoof into the dog, shattering its ribcage and crushing its heart. The dog went tumbling from the deadly blow to lie on the dusty ground, heaving for air, while the other dog circled it, yipping in confusion until the dog expired. Since that, no dog in the pack had been stupid enough to ever bother the mules again.
Damn cat!
The old driver laid a gnarled hand on the crossbow in the seat next to him. Some of the people in the caravan had guns, but they were crude weapons, iron pipes reinforced with hot steel wire bound tight around the length until it cooled and contracted, tightening and strengthening the barrel. Nothing fancy like some Big Bill Sekman's pride. These were heavy long blasters that could also serve as a club. The black powder weapons were muzzle loaders and packed with anything that would fit, sharp rocks, bent nails, broken glass. There were small holes on top with bits of fuse sticking out, pieces of string rolled in black powder, but they worked most of the time. At short range, the crude weapons laid down a hellstorm of debris and could blow a man out of his saddle. They were even more effective against the vultures and stingwings that sailed the desert sky. But against stickies and howlers, they were useless. The muties took little damage from the garbage scatter guns, and the thundering booms only attracted more of the nuke-blasted monsters. The caravan drivers had learned fast to save the guns for people, and to only use crossbows on the muties. Under the canvas sheets covering the carts were wooden barrels, steel drums, copper tubing, and other assorted paraphernalia of their craft. Which, of course, was the production of shine. Although one crazy old wrinkly used to call it moonshine. The members of the caravan weren't blood kin, but close enough. They were brewmasters, and made the cleanest, tastiest shine in the territory. Nobody went blind drinking their brew, and it burned just as smooth in a lantern as it did fueling an engine. Made pretty good Molotovs, too. A couple of seasons ago, word had reached the Mountaineers that Baron Jeffers wanted brewmasters in his ville on the Ojai. Having lost a host of friends and kin to the wolves that winter fall, the Mountaineers thought wolves and Sekmen sounded mighty fine. So they built some carts, gathered tools, and started the long journey from their craggy peaks down into the burning desert. Discovering a small green lizard on the ground, one of the dogs started circling the reptile. The lead mule shied away from the commotion, taking the rest along with him, and the elderly driver nearly lost control of the cart.
Whoa, Moses! Easy, big fella! Easy there!
Slowly remembering that the man fed and gripped them, the harnessed mules grudgingly obeyed, and settled back into their endless drudgery of hauling the heavy carts. The lizard scuttled forward to attack the barking dog, and another hound leapt upon its back to sink sharp teeth into the mottled green hide. Trying to escape, the lizard thrashed around, a pair of iridescent wings unfolding from its ridged back. Shaking its head, the dog snapped the spine of the little mutie, and the lizard shuddered before going still. Gleefully, the dog ripped off a mouthful of flesh and ran away, allowing the others to converge and finish the meal. The tiny reptile didn't go very far among the large dogs, and the famished animals began to race around again, forever on the prowl for anything else to fill the yawning pit of their taut bellies.
Whoa! Good job there, dog!
The old driver reached into his tattered vest and pulled out a silver flask. Thumbing off the cap, he took a short swig of the tepid water. Shine had a lot of uses, but curing your thirst wasn't one of them. Snapping the plastic cap back on, the wrinkly tucked the flask away, then paused to look around.
What in the world's that noise?
Looking upward, the man frowned at the sight of something moving in the sky.
Is that a stingwing?
With the wind blowing in her face, Sandra Tregert was soaring through the sky with an electric tingle in her belly. She would never come down, if that were possible. High above her biplane, thunder pealed in the fiery orange clouds, and a downdraft hit her plane, carrying the reek of ozone and chems. Pulling the scarf tighter across her mouth and nose for protection, Sandra leveled out the Angel and fed more fuel to the hungry engine. She was about halfway back to Thunderville by now. All she had to do was follow the dry river to the mesa, then head for the Ojai, and she was home. Cutting through the excitement of flying was a stab of remorse over leaving her eunuchs in the clutches of those savages in the desert. She had wasted time destroying the demon first, and then when she circled back to kill the cannies, everybody was gone. Sandra had randomly dropped two of her dynamite bombs on the dunes. But aside from creating spectacular geysers of sand, there had been no noticeable results. The men were gone, and there was nothing she could do about that. No satisfaction of revenge. Wild anger boiled up inside the woman.
Fuck! 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 Fuck!
Sandra noticed something moving along the riverbed below. Dipping a wing, she swooped lower for a better view.
Now what do we have here?
It was a convoy. Four large carts being pulled by teams of mules. Leveling the biplane, she scowled at the idea of more outlanders invading her valley. Or they could be mercies hired by another baron to attack her ville. Baron Marengold, or perhaps even the fat fool of a woman, Baron Devulia. She could easily handle the two of them at the same time, once she refueled. That was always the limiting factor. There was just not enough shine to fuel all of the missions she wanted to fly. Fingering the trigger on the joystick, Sandra debated easing some tension by strafing the little carts with blaster fire and killing the mules. That would leave the people in the middle of Mutie Country with no way out but walking, which was the equivalent of a death sentence. It would be kinder to let them buy the farm here and now. Slowly, the woman began to ferociously grin. Unfortunately for them, she wasn't feeling very generous that afternoon. Lowering the wing flaps, Sandra dropped her speed and began to swing around for a second pass when she caught a glimpse of something under the canvas of the second wagon that looked like red metal snakes.
Copper tubing?
That was the one item she needed to be able to make a second still. That would mean twice as much flying time. The very thought filled her with a wild giddiness, but that was swiftly replaced by a cold resolution. She had to have that tubing. However, a glance at her fuel gauge told her that she was already at the point of no return. If she turned back right now, Sandra could get very close to the crater, and her Sekhmen would be able to escort her and the biplane safely inside.
That dust is so much tubing!
Shoving the joystick all the way forward, Sandra almost flooded the engine as she angled into a steep dive, building speed until the guy line supporting her wings began to hum from the wind pressure. The Angel dropped from the sky. A couple of the drivers raised crossbows and started launching arrows her way. The feathered darts arched into the sky, most falling behind to miss her completely.
Ha ha! You missed it, you fuckers!
One arrow did go through a wing, leaving a ragged hole in the silky cloth. Lining up the spinning blur of the propeller, Sandra reached out to flip the safety on the big machine gun. She only had 100 rounds of ammo in the belt in an effort to save weight and fly longer. Sweeping across the caravan, Sandra stroked the trigger, and the entire plane recoiled as the 50 caliber machine gun spit out gouts of flame between the spinning propellers. The heavy-duty combat rounds slammed along the caravan, ripping the canvas and punching through the contents to hit the ground below. The last one exploded into flames.
Yes!
Sandra slipped sideways along an airstream to slide out of range and let them waste precious ammo.
That's it, huh?
She circled back to speed past the carts once more, now concentrating on the harnessed mules standing in neatly arranged clever lines. The animals simply collapsed as the hot lead from the Angel stitched across them in crimson fury. A second cart exploded into flames, and Sandra pulled back on the joystick to climb high once more before the people below could get off a single shot in their climb. By now, chaos filled the riverbed. A couple of men were on fire and ran around flapping their arms like headless chickens. A few of the others were trying to throw sand on the two burning carts, having no effect whatsoever on the blaze. Soon, the entire caravan was ablaze. People, carts, mules, and dogs. So, it was a Shine convoy. Even better. Normally, nobody sane would dare to attack a Shine wag. One wrong shot and all of the precious cargo would be destroyed. At the very worst, the drivers could hold their own Shine hostage with a torch. But the Outlanders had simply not considered that somebody would only want the copper tubing, and what better way to get it than to remove the owners by detonating the Shine.
It's all so simple from up here.
So childishly simple! I am God!
Dodging the incoming arrows, Ryan fired the Steyr from his hip. The soft-nosed 7.62mm round smacked a canny in the chest, spinning him, blood going everywhere. As an arrow slammed into the ground between his legs, JB cut loose with the Uzi, sending out a hellstorm of hot lead. Doc unloosed the Lamar. The mini-ball slammed into another canny, lifting the skinny creature off his feet and sending him flying backward over the dune and out of sight. Triggering his Colt Python, Jack jerked as an arrow hit the collar of his leather jacket.
Oh, shit!
The slim wooden shaft shattered as it ripped open the leather, exposing the hidden steel blade sewn into the lining. Shifting his aim, Jack returned fire, and a canny fell, minus most of his throat. An arrow passed dangerously close to Christie's face and went through her flexing red hair. As several of the animated tendrils fell away, she dropped her revolver and collapsed to the ground, violently shaking from the waves of unimaginable pain coursing through her entire body.
Christie!
Drawing the Sig Sauer, Brian kept shooting and stepped protectively in front of her. The Uzi raking the top of the sand dune, JB moved to cover her back, and Doc filled the protective triangle, with Lamar blowing the flame and thunder with devastating results. Jack holstered his Colt and pulled out a Gren. Arming the charge, he lobbed it high, and it landed right on target, just as two more cannons came into view. As a gritty cloud of sand began to drift to the ground, the companions quickly reloaded and looked around for any more trouble coming their way. The area seemed to be clear. The tattoo-covered bodies of the fallen cannies lay scattered in various stages of dismemberment. The wags were undamaged, and Ryan was relieved to see that nobody in his company was bleeding badly.
Where the hell is Mildred?
JB jerked his head around, then turned, quickly looking for Mildred. She was nowhere in sight.
Millie? Millie!
Shitfire, this was a suck play. Just a fucking diversion to keep us busy while they grabbed her.
Memories of their last encounter with Canis were still fresh in their minds. The companions spun a Jack signal, their weapons at the ready.
What is it, Jack?
This way. They got her, but she fighting.
By the three Kennedys, if these hellish Visigoths dare to harm that sweet lady again...
Can that crap, Doc.
What? Oh, well, yes, of course.
JB and Doc, take the Hummers.
Ryan removed the spent clip from inside the Stire and rammed home a full one. He worked the bolt to break the seal and chamber around.
I'll go with Jack. Christy can... Christy!
Yes, Ryan. I'm okay.
Okay, babe. Ryan didn't believe that for a moment, but he knew she could handle the pain. Christy, having her hair cut, was like a Norm losing a finger. Ryan's hand went impulsively to the patch on his face. Almost as bad as losing an eye.
Christy, take the bike and cover our six. Can you do that?
No problem, lover.
Christy forced herself to stand straight.
Let's go get her.
Enough talk! Let's move, people!
Scrambling for the black Hummer, JB jumped inside. Still nauseous from the after effects of the mutilation, Christy ignored her pounding temples and clumsily climbed onto the Beamer. Seeing her rattled condition, Doc wanted to offer assistance, but knew better and got into the camo-colored Hummer. Christy had been through a lot worse and survived. She would be fine. And God help the first canny she ever got her hands on.
Hey, JB!
Hunched over the steering wheel, Ryan looked out the open window of the Hummer.
Yeah?
Stay sharp. We'll find her.
But your ass, we will!
Walking around the dune, Ryan found Jack yards away, moving fast, as if trying to keep ahead of the windblown dust filling in the tracks. Wisely, Ryan kept clear of the albino teen and let the hunter do his work. Jack watched the ground, and Ryan watched Jack. Overlapping fields of operation was what the trader used to call the tactic. When everybody had somebody else's back, then nobody died but the enemy. Stupid coldhearts would just rush into a fight. The trained sec-men would move in groups. 5 trained people could slaughter 30 disorganized individuals every time. Slowly and steadily, Jack moved across the shifting sands, his face tight as he tried to follow the confusing trail. Going around a large boulder, he reappeared from the other side, frowned, and went back to try another path. He started along a different trail, then stopped and picked up some more beads. Mildred had to be pulling them from her hair to drop along the way.
Triple smart.
It helped a lot. But Jack would still have to be careful that the Cannies didn't discover what she was doing and have somebody rip out a handful to take off and lay a false trail to nowhere. A storm was coming, and the wind was increasing. If he lost Mildred now, she was gone forever.
Sons of bitches mixed up their trail pretty good.
These bastards hunt Norms, JB. They're not stupid.
They were today, Christy. Just like they were the last time they took Millie.
Ah!
Flinching slightly as the desert breeze riffled her hair, Christy started to reply when she saw something move near the top of a nearby sand dune. In a rush of adrenaline, she clawed for her gun, but then realized it was some sort of plant up there. Fronds, the feathery top of bamboo. Jack was nowhere in sight, but she could see Ryan running in the direction of the bamboo. Christy raced ahead to join them. Nearing the dune, the loose sand suddenly became much firmer, and she spotted dead grass mixed here and there in a patchy carpeting. Soon, green grass was pushing through the sand, and flowering bushes dotted the land as small grooves of bamboo trees thrust upward to form a natural windbreak. Slowing her bike, Christy maneuvered through the burgeoning plants, trying to keep a watch on Ryan. She lost him for a second. Then he reappeared from the break in the swaying bamboo and waved her onward. Easing the motorcycle through the gap in the wall of bamboo, Christy discovered a small oasis. Safe from the ravages of the desert sand, green grass and flowering bushes spread across the hidden patch of land, surrounded by the thick bamboo grove. A large pool of clear water filled the center of the oasis. Bees moving in a dark cloud around a large hive set among the rusted chassis of a pre-dark van. Christy halted at the edge of the pool. She could see fish swimming in the water below the lily pads.
Gaia.
It was as if a small part of the pre-dark world had survived in the very heart of the Deathlands. Staring intently at the greenery, Jack was moving through the weeds and rushes growing along a bubbling spring that fed the shimmering pool. With his long blaster and hand blaster held at the ready, Ryan stayed behind the teen, clearly watching the bushes for any signs of suspicious movements. From behind, Christy heard the Hummers arrive. A moment later, JB and Doc walked through the small passage in the bamboo, having wisely decided not to announce their arrival by noisily forcing the wags through the grove. Then, JB stopped dead and thrust a hand into a thorny bush to pull out Mildred's med kit. Having trouble breathing, JB closed his eyes for a moment, then snapped them open and slid the strap of the canvas bag over his shoulder.
She's here.
Both of JB's hands clenched the plastic grip of his Uzi.
Here.
Jack touched a crimson stain on a flowering bush.
Fresh spilled.
As the others started closer, Ryan noticed a ripple of motion in the pool, catching only a brief glimpse of an armed figure. The 9mm round smacked into the naked man rising from the water, who got a chance to fire his crossbow. The arrow flashed across the oasis past Doc. McCanny dropped the crossbow, stumbled, and fell over sideways into weeds along the shoreline. Slowly, a red stain began to spread across the clear water of the pool. Alert for treachery now, the companions gathered around the corpse. Lying sideways in the mud, the man's slack mouth was hanging open, exposing the rows of teeth filed to sharp points. Leanly muscled, his entire body was heavily tattooed in wild designs of swirls, his only clothing a woven belt around his waist, supporting a rubbery tube and a sheathed knife.
An aquatic assassin. Do you suppose he was left behind to try to ambush us?
Not likely.
Ryan pulled the rubber tube from the dead man's belt. There were teeth marks at one end, but not the other.
This is for staying submerged.
Ryan scanned the pool. Below the lily pads and darting fish, there was a dark shape that could be an underwater cave. Instantly, Ryan understood the brilliance of the trap. Lots of predators waited for their prey at waterholes. The Kennys had merely taken it one step further and were hiding inside the dam water. When Outlanders camped along the lake, the Kennys could simply come out at night to gather the sleeping harvest of meat.
We go swimming.
Jack slid off his leather jacket. Dropping the med kit, JB slung the shotgun and checked the clip in the Uzi before tucking the rapid fire into his belt to keep it from flailing around. As Christy waded into the shallows, Ryan started to shrug off his lined jacket, then paused to glance at Doc. The man was scowling at the lake, one fist clenched on the grip of his Lama. Ryan hadn't thought about that. A black powder weapon, the Lama didn't use shells. Dip the blaster into water, and the powder would flow out the sides of the cylinder like black pudding. There were other guns in the Hummers, but the time traveler was attached to the Civil War hand cannon as if it were blood kin. Ryan transferred a grin from his jacket to the pocket of his pants.
Doc, you stay here and guard the wax. Stay sharp. We may come running.
Slowly nodding, Doc pulled out the monstrous hog leg.
None shall pass, Ryan Cotter.
That's the idea.
Christy submerged and started swimming for the bottom of the pool. The fish weren't frightened by her intrusion, which seemed to imply this sort of thing happened often. Tucking his glasses into a pocket, JB went next, with a knife in his teeth and hate in his eyes. After tying off his mane of white hair, Jack smoothly dove in. His powerful arms propelled him downward with amazing speed. Ryan followed. Standing alone on the shoreline, Doc pulled the long steel blade from inside his ebony cane and took a position where he could watch both the pool and the Hummers outside the bamboo.
Why, thou wanderer unseen, thou bender of the thistle of Laura, why, thou breeze of the valley, hast thou left mine ear?
Doc had already decided to give them an hour. Then he would go in after them. There were other guns in the wags. The M16 used bullets that were totally water-resistant. The Lama was a precious link to his past, a physical reminder of a peaceful world that still existed, and a loving wife waiting for him somewhere in time. But his friends were equally important, and where they went, so would Theophilus Algernon Tanner. Wriggling and kicking furiously, Mildred tried to get loose from her captors, but the two cannies holding her only tightened their grips.
Fuck you both!
She struggled even harder, but with the same lack of results. A strip of cloth was tied around her eyes, and scratchy ropes bound her wrists and ankles. With surprising ease, the men were carrying her like a suitcase, her back constantly bumping into the ground. First sand, and now rock. Mildred had nearly died when they went underwater, and ever since they emerged, the wind and sand were gone, the air oddly cool. Obviously, from the acoustics, they were underground in some sort of a cave or cavern. With cold logic, the physician knew that wasn't good. John would never stop searching for her, but while Ryan and Jack were both superb trackers, she doubted if even they could find her now. That water entrance trick was sheer genius. Grimly, Mildred had to accept the fact that she was alone in this, unlike last time, and would need to free herself. Somehow. The ground dipped slightly as the cannies hauled her through some sort of a doorway. In passing, Mildred got a gentle bump on the head and realized this was her chance. She instantly went limp. The two cannies tightened their grips in response, then slowed their walking and shook her. It took everything Mildred had to stay slack, letting her head loll sideways, her tongue extended. She was blindfolded, but they could see, so she had to make it look good. She knew they would be in Dutch with the canny boss if they didn't bring in live food. She landed on the hard ground and gave no response. The canny holding her wrists knelt and started feeling her head to search for a wound among her beaded locks, while the one holding her bound ankle started pinching her calf, which meant that he had only one hand holding her ropes. Moving fast, Mildred snapped her head around and buried her teeth into the canny's hand. He began slapping her face with his free hand. Mildred swung her bound wrists to find his leg, slid up his hairy thighs, and grabbed his genitals to bury her fingernails deep into the soft tissue. She twisted and yanked with every ounce of strength she possessed. The other canny quickly released her ankles. Mildred brought up her knees and kicked out with both of her boots, heels first. Releasing the first canny, Mildred rolled away from the wounded man and clawed the blindfold off her face. She blinked for a few moments to clear her sight.
Oh, shit!
The cavern was pitch black.
Here comes the cavalry.
Bound and blind as she was, there was nothing else for Mildred to try but one last desperate ploy. To attack and try to make them mad enough to kill her fast, instead of the slow torture of being cut apart alive for their hellish meals. Today a leg, tomorrow an arm, or a breast.
Fuck it!
Mildred threw herself forward and lashed out with her two fists clenched tight. But she encountered only air in her effort. Then something hard clunked against the back of her head. She abruptly lost consciousness. Rising from the cool water, the companions slowly walked up the sloping concrete, dipping their weapons to make the water run out of the barrels. They had expected an underground cavern, but this was some sort of a huge pre-dark tunnel. About a dozen yards wide, the floor was a mix of sand and rocks, blending into the curved brick walls that topped with a ceiling, alive with a softly glowing green moss. Quickly, Ryan checked the rad counter on his shirt collar, but it read in the neutral range. That was what he expected. He'd seen such fungus before. It was just some kind of natural moss that Mildred said worked on photo-something or other. He forgot the word. It didn't matter. The plant gave off a weak light and could be found almost everywhere under the Deathlands. One heartbeat later, Jack appeared, his .357 Magnum in one hand and his knife in the other. The teen looked like a drowned rat with his snowy hair plastered flat to his head, but his red eyes burned with cold hatred. They had all seen what cannies did to their food before finally eating it, and their experience in Louisiana was fresh in their minds. Sometimes the victims were still alive when the slicing commenced, their screams primitive music for the cannies as they feasted upon the flesh. Christy pointed at the sand and rocks along the shore, and Ryan nodded in reply. The sand was churned up with bare footprints, boot prints, and red blood.
That was Millie. Millie! We're coming!
JB triggered a blast of his shotgun. The flame lit the tunnel for yards to show an intersection only a short distance away.
Idiot! All the cannies come now!
Let them! I'll take them all on!
Ryan grabbed his friend by the arm.
Come on, JB.
You... Yeah. Sorry, Ryan. I'm losing it here.
JB, it's horrible that Mildred has to go through this again. We understand. Now let's find our friend.
At the sound of the running footsteps, Ryan raised the Sig Sauer as the dark figure came into view. He withheld firing till he saw it wasn't Mildred. The body was still slowly crumpling to the ground when the companion swept past to the intersection. As the canny had come from the left, they looked to the right. There was another canny waiting and hiding there. Armed with a spear, he seemed startled that they had looked in his direction first. And Jack made sure that that was the last thing he ever did. Retrieving his knife, Jack saw that the passage behind the corpse was bricked solid. This was just a side passage used to ambush potential invaders.
Oh.
Christy pointed her gun at a freshly severed human arm hanging from the wall.
God damn it. Is this their food locker?
No. It's the wall to their ville.
Good. If these cannies were strong, they'd hide this and lure folks in deeper.
But they put this shit here to frighten off would-be rescuers, which means there aren't a lot of them. They're weak, and they need tricks for protection.
Good.
Starting toward the other tunnel, Ryan stopped to dig a circle in the sand with the heel of his combat boot, then slashed across the sign with his steel-tipped toe. Hopefully, they wouldn't need a marker to get out of the tunnels, but he had fought cannies before in Texas. Their warren there had been a maze of passages that was almost impossible to exit. The brick tunnel here extended in a slow curve, only to stop as it opened into a large cave. The place was huge, the ceiling and opposite walls completely out of sight. JB touched the floor.
This is fucking concrete. Maybe some kind of a pre-dark water reservoir.
Good place to live in the middle of the desert.
Jack waved a hand and started across the pre-dark materials, bent low as if he were sniffing the trail like a hunting dog. The others stayed close, their weapons sweeping for viable targets. Going to the heart of the darkness, Jack slowed at an opening in a concrete wall. As he slipped past, a drop of water fell from the blackness above to wetly impact the floor. Ryan and the others were right behind Jack. As they stepped into another tunnel illuminated by green moss, Jack eased the trembling body of a canny guard to the floor and withdrew his bloody knife from the back of the man's neck. This tunnel was short and ended in another huge cavern.
Struggle here.
Was it Millie?
Alive and kicking.
This way.
Ryan studied the floor. Apparently, this deep in their home, the Kennys weren't even trying to hide their trail. Why should they? This was safe territory. But not today. Ryan scowled at the sight of nets stretching between erected posts, dividing the huge cavern into smaller areas. Taking the first turn, Ryan soon saw it was a maze of turns.
Fire blast.
Moving through the warren of nets, the companions marked their passage as best as possible until reaching another intersection. Squinting hard against the dim light, Jack checked the ground, but couldn't find any sign of recent travel.
No. Not Mildred, but might know where prisoners camped.
Let's go.
JB and Jack broke into a run. Ryan and Christy quickly followed. Reddish light flared in the distance.